It's an early stage in a negotiation that is beginning between the United States and China.
China talks about free trade as it hosts an expo for international companies. It's Tuesday, November 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, talks continue with North Korea. Asian Americans prepare to vote. New Caledonia votes no for independence. Father's health influence on kids. Fighting fake social media. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping said Monday that China would take steps to widen access to its markets as he opened a huge trade fair amid criticism from other countries about China's economic and business practices. Speaking at the trade expo in Shanghai, Xi pledged to, quote, embrace the world as China promotes the growing consumer market in the world's second largest economy. Xi said, China's open door will not be closed, it will only be opened wider. China will not stop taking steps towards promoting a higher quality of opening up. China will not stop taking steps toward establishing an open world economy. Do the Chinese president's remarks change the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China? VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about that with Peter Petrie, professor of international finance at the Brandeis University International Business School near Boston.
It's an early stage in a negotiation that is beginning between the United States and China. As you know, President Xi and President Trump spoke with each other by telephone a couple of days ago, and it was by both sides, it was reported to be a reasonably positive conversation. And they will meet at the end of November in Argentina at a G20 summit meeting. So they are both at this point trying to figure out how to position themselves for a discussion that I think both hope will yield some results. In that context, I think what President Xi said was reiterating many of the initiatives that China has been already taking to reduce tariffs, to sponsor this very big expo, to increase intellectual property rights enforcement, but there was really nothing particularly new in what he said. So he's basically reiterating China's effort to continue to open its markets, but not yet promising anything specific.
Had there been anything specific expected from this address?
I don't think one should have. You know, some people were disappointed that he didn't go further into specifics. But, you know, this is going to be a very complicated negotiation between China and the United States. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take a lot of staff work on the part of both countries. And I don't think one could have realistically expected him to become more specific at this stage.
Do you think there is a point of no return when the two sides, the U.S. and China, can get together, or is it still part of the posturing between the two countries?
I certainly hope it's that. But depending on when you listen to whom you listen, there have been some very harsh words said, and particularly by Vice President Pence in a speech that he made about a month ago. In which he leveled a wide range of accusations against China. And in a way, he was asking China to make changes that President Xi would have great difficulty making. So, if you listen to that speech, you would have been gloomy. But on the other hand, there are many other voices coming out of both Washington and Beijing that suggests that both countries ultimately will want to work toward a solution.
What about the damage that has been done already by this trade war?
Well, some damage has been done. And I think the damage that has been done has been primarily in the form of introducing a lot of uncertainty into business decision making. If businesses don't know, how long they can sell into a market, what the tariffs will be, what penalties may be imposed if they continue to do business with foreign partners. They're going to be very reluctant to invest, to make deals, to make long-term plans. So that kind of uncertainty has already taken root. The question is, I mean, even if we back away from confrontation now, it's likely that businesses on both sides will be cautious, possibly for many years, before they become fully comfortable again with the environment that, you know, the negotiations may set up.
Peter Petrie, professor of international finance at the Brandeis University International Business School near Boston, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. He says the question of whether business will be cautious for many years before they become comfortable with any new plan that might be set up. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Activists urge deep scrutiny of China at UN rights gathering this week. China, distrusted in Asia's chief maritime dispute, offers to share data. Grief and anger overflow as families confront a silent lion heir. China and Pakistan agree to conduct bilateral trade in yuan. Pompeo resuming nuclear talks with North Korea this week. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is meeting his North Korean counterpart Kim Jong-chol in New York this week. Pompeo said he is confident both sides will advance the ball this week and expressed no alarm over last week's warning from Pyongyang to expand its nuclear arsenal unless the United States lifts economic sanctions. At the same time, the United States and South Korea have begun 2 weeks of small-scale military drills involving hundreds of U.S. and South Korean Marines, maneuvers suspended in June. A decision on resuming larger-scale exercises in 2019 is expected next month. Joshua Pollack, senior research associate at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies, was asked by VOA's Victor Beatty if North Korea will object.
I would imagine that they may say something if they choose to, if they feel that it is against the spirit of the recent agreement on military affairs that they signed with the South Koreans. But as long as it's within the terms of that agreement, they won't have a leg to stand on. I don't think that they're seeking an excuse to disrupt that agreement. So while they might comment on it, that doesn't mean that anything will come of it.
Pompeo said he would be in New York City at the end of this week to meet with Kim Jong-chol. Quote, I expect we'll have some real progress, including an effort to make sure the summit between our two leaders can take place where we can make substantial steps toward denuclearization. What do you think of those comments?
This is symptomatic of how diplomacy between the two sides has proceeded from the start. Everything is connected to a summit, and it seems that the two sides cannot engage constructively and work out an agenda, advance it at the working level. Everything has to be handled at the Secretary of State level, and no fruitful discussions happen at any lower level. It gets to the point where you wonder what the point of appointing an envoy was. I also wonder what the two sides really expect to come out of this summit. It seems that the North Koreans have found that they can get what they want from President Trump in a way that they can't from others. And I don't know what the United States really expects at this point.
What is North Korea getting from the U.S.?
They have gotten a suspension of the large-scale annual combined exercises. And they have gotten a different tone in relations and the validation of a summit meeting, one and quite possibly two now, with the President of the United States. That, in turn, has put them in a different position on the world stage. They are less isolated diplomatically. The Russians and Chinese have decided not to support sustaining sanctions indefinitely and now have shifted to a position where they're willing to entertain a relaxation of sanctions and are willing to engage in more exchanges with the North Koreans themselves. Those are worthwhile things from the North Korean point of view.
Joshua Pollack said last week's North Korean warning was issued by an individual from a group associated with the foreign ministry, suggesting it was muted, not from a senior official, and did not represent an immediate threat. However, he said it appears the North is on course to produce missiles and nuclear weapons on a mass scale, as leader Kim Jong-un stated in his New Year's Day address in January. Happening now in Asia, Sri Lanka's Speaker of Parliament says he cannot accept Mahinda Rajapaksa, the country's former president and strongman, as the new prime minister. President Maithripala Sirisena sacked the prime minister and his entire cabinet last month and appointed Rajapaksa prime minister. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Asian Americans currently make up 3% of the seats in Congress in the U.S. government, but with more Asian candidates running in the midterms, that representation may increase. VOA Asia's Anna Cook spoke with Madeline Milka, president of APAICS, a nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Asian Pacific American participation and representation in politics. Milka explains the marked increase of Asian Americans running for office this election cycle.
We started with 5 in 2000. We have 18 now in 2018. And so the increase of visibility of our AAPI leadership has grown. We have Asian Americans who have been in statewide office in certain states. And then we also have more of them running progressively in the sense of their career trajectory. So running for a state legislative race and then now running for a statewide office. And so as you see more Asian Americans running, I think that's also compelled other Asian Americans to see themselves as potential elected officials.
Do you think that this is a good state that we're in, or do you think we need more to be representative of the Asian American population here?
Is this a good state? It is a it's a good start. So, you know, the Asian American population is 5.8%, and we only have 3% in terms of elected officials. So, obviously, that's room to grow. And with our population also increasing in the years to come, that also means that representation also has to grow in that percentage. So, having that increase has been great to see through the course of time, and so we hope that it continues to increase.
From the research that I've read for this midterms, it seems like a lot of candidates, Asian candidates, are running in the Democratic Party, and it seems like voters are, you know, Asian voters are leaning Democratic. What do you think about that? Is that a growing trend that's unique to this cycle?
Is it a growing trend that Asian Americans are leaning more Democratic? You know, as a nonpartisan organization, we encourage all Asian Americans to vote, be a part of the electoral process, and we think that it's important for their Asian Americans to identify with their values, regardless of what that means in terms of their party affiliation. And so, you know, as we see more Asian Americans running for office and as them self-identifying as Democrats, you know, it's just a reflection of what the population is doing in terms of their own values.
And so do you think that Asian American candidates are having a success in targeting Asian American population, or are they looking at a broader, you know, population that's not limited to Asian Americans?
Well, Asian Americans are running in all types of districts. So, you know, the only district on the mainland of the United States that is majority Asian American is California 17, and it's represented by an Asian American member of Congress. So we always say, since we are a smaller part of the population, that we have to build coalitions, and that means working with other constituency groups and other issue-related types of groups that would be advocating for, you know, similar values. And so when they speak to potential voters, they have to think about how are they building those coalitions. And so Asian Americans are not just speaking to Asian American voters, they're also speaking to other types of voters from different constituencies and backgrounds.
You mentioned that there's more people running this year. Do you see that there will be more seats elected for Asian Americans?
More seats in the caucus, we hope so. With 14 potential new members, that could be a great number for us, considering that we went from we increased the caucus by 4 last year on last election cycle. So, anywhere in between that 1 and 14 would be, a bump for us.
On this politically historic election eve, Madeline Milka, the president of APA-ICS, a nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Asian Pacific American participation and representation in politics. She spoke with VOA Asia's Anna Cook. Coming up, another election says no. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia: distraught and angry relatives of those killed when a Lion Air jet crashed last week have confronted the airline's co-founder during a meeting arranged by Indonesian officials. The Lion Air jet crashed into the Java Sea October 29th, just 13 minutes after taking off from Jakarta, killing all 189 people on board. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day, see and share our stories. As VOA Asia continues, a majority of voters in the South Pacific archipelago of New Caledonia Sunday voted to remain part of France rather than pursue independence. With participation by nearly 81% of eligible voters, nearly 57% of those casting ballots chose to maintain ties with Paris, which has ruled the territory since the mid-19th century. Natalie Doyle, senior lecturer in French studies at Australia's Monash University, tells VOA voters are looking for some change even by voting no to independence.
I think that the population realizes that on their own, they are not strong enough to resist the kind of influence, for example, that the Chinese may wish to exercise in the region. So yes, on the one hand, they want to keep it as they are, but on the other, as I said, the vote does suggest that they want to have more accommodation of this specific cultural identity of this part of the world, and that they probably also want to see the inequalities that exist addressed more forcefully by the French state.
The referendum was part of a 30-year process of decolonization, and two more can be called under the so-called 1998 Noumea Agreement by the year 2022. The referendum also comes amid growing Chinese influence in the region. Despite rich deposits of nickel, New Caledonia, located east of Australia, has relied on French subsidies to bolster its economy. This news from VOA Asia: China has agreed to carry out bilateral trade with Pakistan in the Chinese yuan instead of the U.S. dollar to help ease the South Asian ally's financial and economic woes. Officials and economists say the unprecedented Chinese concession would go a long way in addressing Islamabad's massive 87% trade deficit with Beijing. You always have a surplus of news and features at VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, many people know what a woman's health, including her diet and exercise habits, can impact the health of her baby even before she gets pregnant. Many women try to shed excess weight and check with their doctors to optimize their health, but until recently, little was known about a father's diet and exercise choices. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on a study that shows, just like for women, there's a link between the father's health and that of their unborn children.
Just like that, okay?
Matthew Hurt has always made exercise a priority for himself and now for his sons.
I want it to be just natural for them. I don't want it to be a chore, right? I want them to just
want to go outside, want to be active, and enjoy life to its fullest.
A study at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center looked at the impact of fathers' exercise habits on their offspring. It found that even moderate exercise before a baby is conceived provides a health benefit that can last a lifetime.
That resulted in improved metabolic health in their adult offspring. So essentially it improved their glucose metabolism, decreased body weight, and increased their insulin sensitivity.
The research was done with mice. It found that this was due to certain changes in the sperm. As for people, the World Health Organization says 1 in 4 adults worldwide are dangerously inactive. That increases the risk of obesity, high blood pressure, cardiovascular diseases, cancer, and diabetes.
The idea would be that if you have a dad who wants to have a child, if they could exercise maybe just the month prior to conception, that would have a really dramatic effect on their child's life.
The researchers also found that exercise helped even with a poor diet. Sedentary mice fed a high-fat diet passed along negative health issues like obesity and insulin resistance. The scientists were surprised to find that the diet's negative effects were completely reversed by exercise.
A high-fat diet, even a mild high-fat diet, in this case it was only 3 weeks, changed the profile, but exercise kind of restored it back to normal.
More work needs to be done to see if the same applies to humans. But in the animal studies, exercise for the male mouse was key to the health of his offspring. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You likely have heard about ongoing questions of social media manipulation during recent elections in a bid to sway voters' decisions. As U.S. voters prepare and are about to head to the polls, all eyes are on how Facebook is grappling with giving people a platform to speak, but also keeping misinformation in check. Michelle Quinn has some real information from San Francisco.
These Facebook posts may look legitimate, but they were part of a disinformation campaign coordinated by Iranians and recently uncovered by the company. As the U.S. prepares for its midterm elections, the social networking giant is working to reduce misinformation while also keeping Facebook a place for people to share.
A lot of the work of content moderation for us begins with our company mission, which is to build community and bring the world closer together.
As part of its stepped-up efforts, Facebook enlists fact-checkers and takes down misinformation that contributes to violence. But popular content, often dubbed viral, is frequently the most extreme. Facebook says it manages to reduce future views of posts it deems incorrect by 80%. But it's not easy to draw the line.
I mean, if you think about it, they get, millions, billions of new posts a day, most of them some factual claim or some sentiment that nobody's ever posted before. And so to go through those and figure out which of these are actually misinformation, by any definition, you know, which of these are false, which of these are intended to manipulate an electoral outcome, that's a huge challenge. There isn't a human team that can do that in the world. There isn't a machine that can do that in the world.
Keller works at Stanford and used to be on Google's legal team. She says getting each decision right is impossible, and that Facebook is ahead of others in terms of making its process transparent. But it's still struggling. Vice News recently posed as all 100 senators and bought fake political ads. Facebook, which approved them all, said it made a mistake. Politicians in Britain and Canada have asked Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook's CEO, to testify on Facebook's role in spreading disinformation.
We need to understand that it is built into the system that there will be a fair amount of failure, and we need things like appeals processes and transparency to address that.
Since the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign, Facebook has also been working on showing users more what happens behind the scenes. While the U.S. election is about issues such as immigration and the economy, it will also be a test of how well Facebook's new systems are working and what the social networking giant needs to do going forward. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco, California.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Many of you have been listening on the radio throughout Asia. We thank everybody who's tuned in today, especially those who were listening on U Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25, Hatay University in Thailand. Thank you so much for being with us today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Aydin Utku, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.